Welcome to Report Out's Hidden Voices podcasts from around the globe. Report Out is a human rights research organisation and charity based in the UK. Report Out monitors, researches and documents the lived experiences of sexual and gender minority people and their communities in different nation states. We use this information to educate others on the lived experiences of sexual and gender minorities and to campaign and push for social change across the globe. You may notice that we use the term SOGSC, which means sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, and sex characteristics. Why do this? Because it's a culturally sensitive umbrella term to cover all sexual and gender minorities. These interviews will consist of SOGSC individuals who live in different nation states, and whilst we'll be discussing the barriers that they face, we will also highlight how they find resistance to them. Welcome to our Hidden Voices podcasts.
So my name is Kanav and I'm from India, and I'm currently pursuing my master's degree from Azim Prem University in Bangalore. And I identify as a cisgender homosexual man. I'm so sorry. I was about to say heterosexual. I'm so used to saying that in front of people. Yeah. It's one of the rare occasions when I get to actually tell people who I am. So I identify as a cisgender homosexual man.
Yeah.
And I live in Kolkata at the moment, which is my hometown due to the pandemic. But otherwise, I'm based out of Bangalore in India.
Brilliant. So how have you found it being back at home?
It's been really good, actually. A year ago, I was not at all happy being at home because I felt very suffocated and isolated. I'm not out to all of my family members. And last year was a very difficult year because I wanted to come out to certain family members and I just felt that it wasn't possible. But this time around, things have been different. Because of the pandemic, a lot of us have been forced to come home. In my case, I wanted to come home because I missed home. And I think the pandemic kind of teaches you to value a lot of what you don't have. And in India, a few months ago, a lot of migrant workers were forced to walk or barefoot. They were forced to walk home. And just watching those sights made me miss my own home. I really wanted to come back home. So I came back. I came back a few months ago and I'm really happy to be home. I'm really happy to be with my family and I'm just grateful to have a home to go back to.
So when you had those discussions with your family about your sexuality, what was that like?
So I actually haven't come out to all my family members, as I told you. I spoke to my mother a few years ago. It was in 2018 to be precise. And soon after, I came out to my younger brother, and it was a very good discussion. It was very difficult because at that point in my life, I was in an unhappy job, and I was also meeting a lot of men. I was just meeting lots of men, going on different dates. And I really wanted to be honest to my mom about who I was and what I was doing. And I felt like this was a big part of my life that I was keeping a secret. And I was, and I'm very close to my mother. So I took a risk. I called her to my grandmother's room and I sat her down and I told her that, Mom, I want to tell you something. And I told her that I'm gay and I just wanted to let you know. That's what I told her.
So what was her reaction? Sorry.
Right, exactly. She was, she was accepting because my mom has, she's an educated woman. She she's aware of the fact that you have multiple sexual identities. She actually, When I was studying in Canada a few years ago, she met me and she attended the Pride Parade because in Canada, the Pride Parade is not a is a normal part of Canadian life. It happens in June or July. Everybody attends it. And so my mom attended it as a tourist. It was not, it was not seen as an abnormal, unnatural parade. It was just a celebration, actually. So she attended it and she saw men kissing and all of that. And it was just how it is. So I think she's aware of the fact that you have different sexual identities. And so when I told her that I was gay, she was okay with it. She has no problem with it even today.
So when you came back from Canada, having been to the Pride event, did your changing think in terms of what you will accept and what you won't accept in terms of the treatment towards you?
So that's a great question. When I was in Canada, I was actually closeted and I had no idea that Canada was such a liberal country. And I was not even aware of the kind of laws that Canadians have with respect to LGBTQ rights. So I learned a lot there. I think for me, being in Canada, my biggest learning was that during Pride Parade, during the Pride Month rather, people in Canada celebrate Pride, whether they're gay or straight. And so for me, I remember sitting in my office in my workstation, and I remember my manager walking up to me with a rainbow sticker and telling me, you know, this is a rainbow sticker, it's Pride Month, here you go, and if you want to distribute it to others, you're free to do it. And I was quite shocked, to be honest. I was not expecting a random coworker to walk up to my desk and just give me a Pride sticker. And so I think I took that back when I came to India.
Yeah.
And I realized after a few years, I started researching about LGBT rights. And I realized that every country has different laws around, that relate to sexuality and gender identity. And so India is one of those countries where we don't talk about sexuality and sex and gender identity very openly. And so that is one of the reasons why we've had to fight for so long to decriminalize homosexuality. And so what I discovered was that different countries have different laws, and that these different laws really depend on how people and governments and societies view gender minorities and sexual minorities. And I was surprised to know how different it is. And in India, at the time when I started researching these laws, I discovered that India had criminalized homosexuality. And all of this information, by the way, is available on Wikipedia. And it is actually quite accurate. All you need to do is go on Wikipedia and type LGBT.
Yeah.
And you get a list of countries and you have information for every country. So I spent a lot of time reading about these countries and their laws. And I discovered that Canada has had a very rich history of social movements with respect to women's rights, with respect to LGBTQ rights.
Yeah.
And in India, the movement started pretty late as compared to Canada. And so I'm not surprised that it took us so long to decriminalize homosexuality and to recognize the third gender. But I think it really gave, reading and researching about these laws gave me perspective. And I was able to compare why is life in Canada so different and why is queer life in India so different. So I really was able to make those comparisons only when I came back to India.
Yeah. So so was there anything like really eye-opening when you were looking into the LGBT information that you were finding?
Yes, there were many eye-opening things. I think the most shocking thing for me was to realize that in certain countries you could be killed for being gay. And most shocking than that was that I had actually visited one of those countries. It was Indonesia. I don't recall if the current law calls for capital punishment for homosexuals or whether it calls for imprisonment, but it's really, really strict. And I actually went to Indonesia in 2012 for an internship. Of course, I was very closeted then, but I was shocked to learn that. And of course, Saudi Arabia also has a law that calls for capital punishment for homosexuals. And also Dubai, a country where I have some relatives living, and it's a very popular tourist destination. And it also has very regressive laws for the LGBT community. And I believe there have been cases of tourists having being sent to jail and extradited from the country when they were caught having sex with men. So these laws shocked me. It was very personally triggering also for me.
Yes.
And at that time I had befriended a friend from Kuwait, and I had a conversation with him, and he told me that life is very hard, and even if you're not openly gay, but if you're effeminate, people just don't respect you and they don't treat you like an equal. And unlike in some countries, like in Canada, where being gay can be considered a matter of pride, in these countries, it's nothing to be proud of. These were his own words. So it really affected me when I heard that.
So is there any place in India where if you feel very comfortable to be yourself?
Yes, I would say pride parades are the best places to be because you have people from everywhere, from all from you see people from who are from different parts of the identity spectrum. I've seen lesbian people, I've seen trans people, I've seen asexuals, and of course gay people and all of that. So pride parades are good, but then they happen once a year, and because of COVID, we may not have a pride parade this year. But apart from that, I think activist spaces have been really good. When I moved to Delhi after coming back from Canada, I attended a lot of LGBTQ activist meets, and these meetings would happen in different hotels and different places in Delhi. And what I really loved about these meetings was that there was a lot I learned from the speakers and also from the attendees. And I learned about the legal and political and social history behind why LGBTQ people have been oppressed in India. And I want to mention that in India, the nature of oppression is very different from the nature of oppression in Canada. So these were stories I learned in India and I learned in these spaces. And once again, I met lesbian women, I met trans people, of course, gay people, and people who were closeted, and all sorts of people at these meetings. And I felt really happy that we were discussing this in these forums. And I really liked that people were willing to share their stories and also talk about the history and the reason why we were there, and also mention what we needed to do in the future.
So, can you remember the first friend that you had the confidence to say, I want to tell you something and I trust you with this?
Yeah, I do actually. So when I came back from Canada, I met one of my close female friends, and I told her I was bisexual. That's kind of how I started the discussion. You must remember, when I came out to her as bisexual, I did it at a time when the anti-homosexuality law was still in place in India, and homosexuality was still a crime. So I wasn't comfortable telling her that I was gay. But I felt that I could tell her I was bisexual, which means that I'm interested in men and women. And so I felt probably she would be more accepting of me if she knew I was into both men and women and not just men. So I told her that. And the reason I told her was because she is a very open-minded person. Her parents divorced, and she's always been a very opinionated and a very defiant woman. And I felt that she would accept and understand me because I wanted to come out to somebody who would not be very, very orthodox, and I knew she would not be like that. So when I told her I was bisexual, she was very cool about it. In fact, she told me that one of her very close friends was lesbian. And that same night, I stayed over at her house. She showed me photos of her lesbian friend and that lesbian friend's partner. And she was like, "See how cute they are." And I was shocked. I was like, "Okay, I didn't expect you to be so accepting, but I'm happy." And I think after I came out to her, I came out to a few other friends, and that just set the ball rolling. And eventually, after coming out to probably four or five friends, I decided to come out to my mother. So that's kind of how it happened.
Do you feel that you had to be careful when it came to social media? Because obviously you want to you don't want to kind of like create a shock for people, but at the same time you want to be able to enjoy being yourself.
Yes, I that's exactly how I feel even today, even though I'm out to quite a few people. When I started coming out to people slowly, I was very mindful of what I put on social media. And even before that, I was even more mindful because I didn't want to put any pro-LGBTQ related information on my profile because I was afraid that people would assume that if I am pro-LGBT, it means I'm gay, and I didn't want to out myself. But now, of course, now that I'm out, I am a little bit happier. I have control over who's on my social media. But then again, I'm currently staying. I'm sorry, I have a rented apartment. I'm staying with my family, but I have a rented apartment in Bangalore, which is another city. And my landlord's on my WhatsApp, and I don't want him to see some of the pro-LGBTQ stuff I post because I don't know how he'd take it. And in our country, we don't have laws that prohibit landlords from evicting people because they're LGBTQ. So even if he does decide to evict me because of my identity, I cannot do anything because it's technically not illegal. So I've had to block him from my WhatsApp stories, and I've done the same with other people in the building, because I don't want them to then complain to him. So even today, I have to hide my identity in front of certain people. And unfortunately, what happens is, as you move forward in life and you meet different people, you, as a LGBTQ identifying individual, I have to be very careful with who knows how much about me.
Yeah.
And it's like this constant negotiation of who can I be open with, who can I not, who is safe to talk to, who is not. And this, unfortunately, is something that I've been doing for as far as I remember, and I might have to do it for many years going forward as well.
Yeah. And I know, like, the Supreme Court has, at least for the past 2 years, decriminalized same gender sexual activity under Indian Penal Code. But has that made a positive difference, or has it only resulted in increased levels of hate crime?
I would say that it has led to a positive difference in elite urban spaces, because India is a very stratified and unequal society where you have pockets of privilege, you have certain spaces, and the elite spaces are the spaces I was able to attend and be a part of, where the decriminalization was met with very positive responses. And I have started to see more people on social media talk about this, the issue of homosexuality. And I've also seen allies being a little bit more vocal, talking about this issue. And Bollywood, which is a very important media for social, not for social change, but for changing social perception. Bollywood also released two or three movies after the verdict that talk about same-sex love in India, which was very bold, I would say, because Bollywood has never spoken about this issue with sensitivity before. And you must remember that these movies are watched by millions of Indians. And India has there is a history of citizens boycotting movies and filing police reports against celebrities who make movies that quote-unquote hurt Indian sentiments. So yes, there has been a change in some spaces, but otherwise I would say at the ground, no. Hate crimes have continued. There are many stories of people from rural India, from people from small towns who still experience homophobia. And to many people, the law hasn't really made a difference, because what the law basically does is it decriminalizes same-sex activity in the private sphere, but society is still as homophobic as it was. And this decision was not a democratic decision. It was five judges sitting in New Delhi who made this decision after, of course, 20 years of litigation. But ultimately, it wasn't as if the people of the country voted and decided that this law be changed. So people in India are still very homophobic. And unfortunately, that is just the way things are even today.
So what are, like, from the LGBT community where you are living in India, what are some of the main frustrations?
So there are many frustrations. It really depends on who you talk to. Because as I said, India is a very stratified society. India is divided on the basis of caste. And so there are Dalit LGBTQ people who talk about how Dalit rights are not given enough priority, and that Dalit LGBTQ people are not, their voices are not heard. And so they believe that you must address the issue of caste inequality before talking about any other form of inequality. And then you have, I would say, a more privileged set of Indians, LGBTQ Indians, who believe that the urgent requirement is to legalize same-sex marriage, which is, by the way, being litigated in the various, in two or three high courts in India. And of course, the transgender community is currently fighting against the Transgender Act, which was passed last year. And that act has many problematic provisions, and it is also being litigated. And I would say, if you talk to everyday LGBTQ people, many of them will say that society is just really homophobic and queerphobic. And transphobic and biphobic. And so maybe what we need is some sort of awareness. And that's really not happening. So I think everyone is suffering. It really depends on who you talk to. And it's pretty worrying right now.
Yeah. So do you think sometimes, like, the people who are kind of resisting LGBTQ rights, that do you feel that sometimes they're just using culture and tradition as an excuse to kind of like stop LGBT people enjoying, like, being who they are properly?
Yes, in fact, when a few weeks ago, when a petition was filed in the Delhi High Court to legalize same-sex marriage under the Hindu Marriage Act, the arguments against granting these rights was basically that same-sex marriage is against Hindu culture.
Yeah.
This is the argument that was made. And it's not just Hinduism, but when 377 was debated, I remember reading about an Islamic cleric and a Christian cleric or a priest or whatever, also making arguments against this decision, where they said this goes against not just religious values, but they made other legal arguments as well.
Yeah.
And so I've noticed that religious groups are very hesitant to grant LGBTQ people equal rights. And this is nothing new. It's not just India. We see this in the United States. We see this in other countries. It's very bad in Poland right now, where Catholicism is used, weaponized to allow for discrimination against the community. And I think you're absolutely correct. Culture and tradition is often used to deny the community equal rights. And it's very unfortunate, because sometimes the courts capitulate to these very regressive ideas, and we have to continue fighting, and it takes years and years and years to change people's minds sometimes.
Have there been any friends that you've who are equally LGBTQ and who have shared stories with you about, like, any violence they've experienced?
Yeah, I can't remember any of them at the moment.
Yeah.
But I do recall hearing such stories, because I talk to so many queer LGBTQ people on a regular basis, and I hear different stories. I've heard stories of rape. I've heard stories of people using Grindr, the dating app, meeting people and being harassed. And I've heard stories of people being abandoned and family members not accepting them. I mean, it's unfortunately become very commonplace for me. It's something that I've become very used to.
Yeah.
So there's nothing new there. And so this is also something I study about at my college.
Yeah.
So as I said before, I'm pursuing my master's in development. And a few days ago, I read a paper which was published in 2006, which talks about the violence that lesbian women in India face. And what we discovered in the paper was that the family was the main site of violence. It was, it really boils down to your family. If your family doesn't accept you, then you're really stuck. But if they do accept you, then you're very lucky. Yeah. And that's basically kind of what I've also seen with my family and friends.
Is there anyone particular in your family that you're most nervous about sharing?
It's my father.
Father, yeah. Yeah. So
it's because my father, I love him a lot, and he loves me a lot, but he has a mental illness, and I don't know if he's ready to understand and just make sense of what LGBTQI means. And so I'm not really confident about coming out to him right now.
Cool. But it's good that at least you've got that support from your mom anyway. And also you said your younger brother as well. Was that correct?
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
So when you came out to your younger brother, because obviously he's looking up to you as an older brother, what was that? How emotional and how important was that conversation with him?
Yeah, it was really good. I'm not sure if he looks up to me, because I sometimes look up to him. So I think it's kind of like an equal relationship. But it was very nice, because he's 3 years younger to me, and his friend circle is very different from mine. So I would say there is some kind of generational gap, but it's really good, because he had no problems. In fact, for him, it was like a non-issue. It's like, I don't even care, like, whatever. And I found out a few years later that two of his close friends are actually also from the community. And in fact, out of those two friends, one of them is pretty much his best friend, and he is currently exploring a sexual identity. So my brother actually already knows people from the community who are his friends. So I think that is one of the reasons why he probably was accepting of me. He didn't find it hard to understand where I was coming from. And I think this is something I've also learned, that if you have met LGBT people in your life, it becomes easier to accept a family member. Because as I said before, my mom had attended Pride. My brother has a close friend who's from the community. That friend I spoke about, the female friend, already had a lesbian friend. So when you already have people in your life, it becomes easier to accept others. But it's very difficult in societies where everyone is closeted, and it becomes very hard to tell anyone then.
Yeah. So what are the main levels of support for the LGBT community? And is it straightforward process to get access to their help and guidance?
Are you talking about India?
Yeah, India. Yeah.
There's no straightforward process. Mm-hmm. If you are LGBTQ and if you are in trouble, you have to reach out to people on social media or just contact friends and family. And I'm sorry, not friends and family, but friends, because more often than not, it's the family that abandons them.
Yeah.
You will need to contact friends and strangers, actually, and ask for help. And whoever is willing to help will help. It's basically that. Social media is really helpful. I've received tons of WhatsApp messages and Facebook posts mentioning certain individuals who were abandoned, and these posts basically ask for help, ask for shelter, ask for money, etc. And so that is how it works. There is no helpline, to my knowledge, that where you could call if you're abandoned. There is, it's very hard to find therapists who would listen to you if you're suicidal, because most therapists charge money. So it's very hard, and I think it's really unfortunate. If you don't have any friends and allies, it'll be very hard for you to find support.
So for you, who would you say now is your main support circle?
I would say my family, my mother in particular, even my father, actually. He may not know who I am, but I do consider him to be part of my support system. I would say it's mostly my family, and I have a circle of friends. Straight friends also. In fact, some of my straight friends are probably even more bigger allies of the community, because one of my straight friends, she completed her master's in gender studies. And so she knows a lot about queer politics. I would also say at my university, my faculty, the professors, teach me, and also my classmates, are all allies. At least most of them are on my face. I don't know what they say behind my back, but at least in class, they're pretty supportive, and they know who I am. I'm very open about who I am. And I'm also very vocal about bringing this into the development discourse and into academics. And so I would say I have a pretty good support system so far at my university, at my family, and with friends.
So what would you say to people listening to our discussion today, not to feel scared about, like, having those discussions about sexuality, having those discussions about gender? What would you say to them to kind of encourage them to not shy away, but actually address it?
Basically, that's exactly what you said is exactly what I would say, which is to not shy away from these discussions. If you're a straight person, then you should try to understand where a person is coming from. It is complicated. I will not deny that. That this concept of sexuality, gender identity, sex, gender, these terms are used interchangeably. But there is a lot of research that has been done over the years to explain what these terms mean. But I think when a person tells you that I am bisexual, or I am asexual, or I am transgender, it should be, it's important for us to understand what it means, because we are living in a time where things have changed, and where people are slowly coming out and trying to tell the world who they are. And so we have to move forward, not backward. And I think for people from the community also, if possible, I would urge them to try to read as much as they can, because a lot of information is available online and a lot of people are willing to help. It's very hard to connect to these people, but if you try, you might find one person who will then connect you to someone else, and that's how you build a network.
So do you remember the first time someone came to you and said, Kanav, I've got something really important to tell you?
I do remember this happening on multiple occasions, but at the top of my head, I can't recall any one particular incident. But, you know, I remember people messaging me, telling me that I'm depressed and I'm anxious and I don't know what to do. And there was one person in particular, actually, who my straight friend requested I speak to. And he gave me this guy's, let's call him X, Mr. X.
He gave me Mr. X's
WhatsApp number. He gave me Mr. X's WhatsApp number. I chatted with him and he was very depressed. His family was not accepting him. And I just spoke to him on WhatsApp. Rather, I chatted with him. I don't think I said anything that was useful. But he's been in touch with me for the past 2 years. And not just for no reason, but just to be friends. And I actually like his company. And I was very happy to know a year ago that he actually has a boyfriend and that he's in a relationship with him. And they love each other a lot. And I was very happy to hear that, because imagine suffering so much trauma and not having your family accept you. And then you find a partner and apparently the relationship is going strong. I was so happy. And so I really liked his company and I still chat with him. So I remember that one incident, and there have been others also, but this one really stood out for me.
Brilliant. And just going back a little bit, you mentioned you used to go on a lot of dates, and you mentioned dating apps as well and how other people were sharing kind of like horror stories. So when it came to you going out on a date with another guy, were there any fears of whether the person on the other end is actually going to be the genuine person, or maybe a bit of fear for your life?
Yeah, that fear has always been there, especially a few years ago when I would not really know much. No one really taught us, I would say any of us, about how to date safely. So most of us have taken risks. We've gone on dates at 11 o'clock at night. I mean, I can tell you one really scary story. I met this guy at like 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock at night, and we were done at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock, and there were no cabs available. And so what he did was he escorted me down near the bus station, and he told me that he will find a bus that's moving into he told me he would catch a bus on the highway, and he told me to basically board any random bus, whether it's that bus or any other bus, and just tell the bus driver to drop me home. And I didn't find that to be very reassuring, because this was in Delhi, and Delhi is a very unsafe city. And I felt pretty hurt also that he wouldn't allow me to stay over, even if it was staying over in a separate room, because he lived in a huge house. So anyway, I remember I walked home at like 3 o'clock at night. I mean, in the pitch dark, no street lights, and I was very scared. So I would never do that again. Anymore. In fact, I've stopped going out at night. I would never do it anyway. But that was a very traumatic incident.
When you kind of like get that treatment where like you've been with a guy and then they're kind of like you said, they live in a big house, but they're kind of like chucking you out into the street, pretending you're just some randomer. How does that make you feel?
It made me feel really bad. I don't do such things anymore because I've now realized that it's not worth it. But it made me feel bad. It was, we had our fun when I met him, but after the fun is over, it's, you know, goodbye. And people just literally leave you to your own devices. And unfortunately, there's no sense of ownership, right? Whether I live or die after I meet him, how does it matter to him? And once again, this was all happening at a time when the law was in place. So the police probably wouldn't care there, in fact, rather than police caring, the reverse used to happen, where the police would extort people for money, telling gay people that we will expose you and we will tell the world, or we will tell the higher ups that you are gay, and we will punish you under 377. So the police could never help you. So if you went for a date with a guy, and if he rapes you, or if he does sexually assaults you, there's nothing you can do. So these were the risks at that time. I don't know if much has changed now, as I said.
Yeah.
But yes, it's really very, you feel really bad.
So one other thing I'd just like to ask you is, like, for anyone listening to our chat today, and if they're feeling a little bit scared themselves, what encouragement would you give them to kind of like not be afraid?
Yeah, I would say it's really important to have a group of friends or family members who can support you. And my advice is, if you're going on a date, always text somebody and tell them that you're going. It's very hard if you are not open to anyone. But I think if possible, find at least one person you can talk to, even if it's a sibling.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would say just remember that you're not alone, because everybody goes through these problems, whether you're in India or in America.
Yeah.
I've heard similar stories in countries like America, where people are kicked out of their homes.
Yeah.
And even in countries like Canada, where you have gay conversion therapy. I'm not in Canada, sorry, in America, where gay conversion therapy still happens.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a problem all over the world. And so friends are important, I think.
So moving forward, you've already mentioned an increase in awareness, but what further can officials in India do to make communities in India even more safer for LGBT community?
There are so many things that can be done. In fact, something I kind of grapple with is where to start.
Yeah.
Because you have bullying, you have homophobia, queerphobia,
yeah,
transphobia, you have no sex education, you have no police helpline, you have no sensitization among families, there are cases where psychiatrists recommend conversion therapy, and you have laws also. As I said, the Transgender Act is a problematic law.
Yeah.
So there are problems everywhere. I honestly don't know where to start, but I think what I would say is, at the moment, the two major issues that I'm seeing play out, number one is the Transgender Act that is being litigated, and number two is the same-sex marriage law that is also being litigated. And so I think probably these are the two most practical ways to go forward. I think hopefully same-sex marriage, the law changes, and hopefully that will again change people's mindsets. And similarly, I hope the Transgender Act also gets amended. And I think what should happen then is, one thing will lead to another. So when same-sex marriage becomes legal, people can then fight for anti-discrimination laws, which is what the US did, where they legalized same-sex marriage in 2015.
Yeah.
And then I think a few months ago, they prohibited discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. So I think this cascading of laws is what probably will work. And I think once these laws start to change and more laws get passed, I think probably politicians will start taking the issue seriously. But my concern is that it will not reach the grassroots, because I don't see much happening in small towns and rural areas. And that's a concern.
Yeah, totally. So, Kanav, it's been really lovely speaking to you. Just one more question. So when you think about your own life and what you've been through, what are the moments that have filled you with hope and that have made you feel proud of the progress you've made personally so far?
It's been great speaking to you also, and it's been nice talking about my issues. It's not very often that I get to share my life experiences. And I think for me, there have been a lot of great moments. I think coming out to my close family was one of them. And I also would say, very recently, at my master's program, I've been really trying to get people to talk about this issue. And I've been raising LGBTQI issues in class discussions. And very recently, in my mental health class, I noticed that our curriculum covered a module on mental health and gender, but it only spoke about women. And so I requested my professor to change that and to include LGBTQI people also, because gender isn't just about women, it's about men. And when we talk about men and women, we should also talk about trans people. And then when you talk about trans people, you also talk about the other people, LGBT, etc.
Yeah.
So she actually agreed. And so that part of the course is going to change. And so, and what that means is that everyone in class will have to now study that. So I really like the fact that at my university also, I'm able to bring about some change. And I wouldn't have had the courage to do this some probably 4 or 5 years ago, because I was at a stage where I doubted my own abilities. So this has definitely been a proud moment, and I hope that more great things happen in the future.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Kanav, and I wish you all the best.
You're welcome.
And may your thank university you. Studies go well as well.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking to you.
Definitely.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.
If you would like to get involved with the work of Report Out, please visit our main website at www.reportout.org, where you can subscribe to our regular email distribution list, which allows you to get exclusive access to our latest and exciting news, blogs, and projects. You can even donate to us to ensure that our work continues. We're also on all social media platforms, so please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn for regular updates on SOGSC human rights across the globe. Lastly, Report Out would like to give a huge thanks to all of our podcast interviewees and listeners for their valuable time and support. Your voices are no longer hidden, and when voices come together, they make us stronger as a movement.